I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello there. You are listening to Flop Culture. This is a podcast all about flops, the good, the bad and the ugly. I'm your host, Fionnuala. I hope you're very well. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode with Hannah Mamlis on Step Up 2, The Streets. We've got another sequel from a big franchise for you today. But before we get into that, let's get into the news. April Fool's Week, obviously, nobody was safe. And I knew when Lizzo declared that she was quitting, as she said on social media, I knew it was some form of April Fool's. I knew the timing was just too convenient, even though I think she did post on like March 31st, whatever. It was all a bit too convenient for me. And I figured it's going to be some kind of single launch or some kind of promo thing for something else. She started frantically posting about her Yeezy shapewear line that they were coming out with swimmer. So I was like, oh, it's something to do with that. But then anytime I was looking at the promotional material, I was like, I wasn't really getting the connection. Anyway, she's clarified that when she posted about quitting, it actually wasn't about quitting the industry. It was about quitting, you know, bad vibes, quitting negative energy, essentially, because she was fed up with being targeted for her looks and character online. When I say I quit, I mean I quit giving any negative energy attention. What I'm not going to quit is the joy of my life, which is making music, which is connecting to people because I know I'm not alone. In no way, shape or form am I the only person who's experiencing that negative voice that seems to be louder than the positive. Now, this wouldn't be anything to talk about were she not amidst a lawsuit filed last year by her former dancers in which she was accused of sexual harassment, creating a hostile work environment. She was accused of fat shaming one of her dancers. She's still in the midst of this and does seem to be, you know, when we talk about cancellation and cancelling in inverted commas, and it's not something that I massively believe in because for the most part, like, people don't get cancelled. People come back. Maybe they have smaller careers or their careers look different. But for the most part, no one is ever fully cancelled. In her case, she does seem to be bearing the brunt of these allegations. People seem to be struggling with that. And I know when she initially announced being like, I quit, you had 50% of the comments, or I don't know, 50% of the comments being like verified famous people accounts being like commenting the lyrics to Special back to her. And then the other 50%, maybe it was a little bit more than that, basically being like, bye, lol. So is it just a thing of, is she actually going to be able to recover from these accusations? Where is the lawsuit going to go? Why is she allowing this to play out then in the public narrative and on social media when these are very serious allegations. These are still ongoing. And you're kind of rage baiting, click baiting with these April Fools being like, I quit, knowing that people would think you meant you were quitting the music industry, being famous, whatever, only for them to come out and be like, no, no, it's like the negative energy. It's not just negative energy. Let's be real. And this is to say that I don't doubt the abuse she gets is and continues to, or was and continues to be horrific, especially related to how she looks, right? That doesn't then negate the fact that she's been accused of very serious things. You know, I don't know. It's just, it's baffling to me as a public persona why her team isn't intervening here and isn't being like, will we put the phone down, Melissa? Will we maybe not post about quitting? Will we maybe not make this like an April Fool's kind of a thing and a big like F you to the haters? I should also say, in the midst of her posting about I quitting, like, we should have known that this was a spoof, because she did this concert in New York and it was, I think it was like a president's concert, like three former US presidents were there. I don't know. So then in some ways, again, do you argue, is she cancelled? No, because she is still getting booked for things. You know? I don't know. I just find it very weird. It was one of the weirder April Fool's things that I was like, okay, that it didn't even come, it wasn't even a jokey thing. It was her again coming out and being very defensive. I don't know. Celebrities, eh? They are weird. Speaking of weird, superheroes, Spider-Men, men made of spiders. Let's talk about it. The Amazing Spider-Man series was part of a plan by Sony to create their own film universe that could rival the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And while the first Amazing Spider-Man starring Andrew Garfield made money and got generally positive reviews, its sequel killed the franchise, paving the way for Sony's deal with Marvel to have Spider-Man instead join the MCU. But does The Amazing Spider-Man 2 deserve the ire that is often directed at it? Joining me to discuss is comedian John Spillane. Enjoy. John Spillane, you are so welcome to Flop Culture. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. Are you nervous?
After that clap, I don't know if that included, but it suddenly put me on edge. I was so confident. We'd synced up the sound so good. Yeah. And then I'm not showing any shade.
You, so kind of seems like you are, but I agree.
I have a little bit of shade there. Yeah. And it's just leading into the nervousness now. Yeah. It was the shade throwing.
Okay, well, don't be nervous. I just want to say, I saw you 2 years ago at Peter McGann and Shane Daniel Byrne's Christmas Spectacular, whatever the fuck that was called, in Liberty Hall. And you, not to ruin this, if you ever plan on doing this bit again, but you came out dressed as the Grinch and gave out packets of smoked fish to people in the audience.
Yeah, packets
and
of mackerel, yeah.
I thought I was going to get sick laughing. So I just want to say thank you for that bit, because it has sustained me for several months and has maintained my mental health. So I do really appreciate that.
Oh, you're very welcome. Yeah, there's a Grinch. He's a good man. And not mackerel, I think, is a good Christmas gift.
Yeah.
I just like the sound packet of mackerel as well.
Okay.
It's like, here's a packet of mackerel. If I'd known you liked the bit so much, I would have come dressed as the Grinch.
I'm kind of disappointed. Yeah, but you also didn't come dressed as the Flop, which I was also maybe slightly anticipating. But you did come with
the spoilers, there's lots of blue involved in my... If you're a fan of the colour blue, wait till you get a load to what I've got over here. It's no spoiling, but I think I got one of the greatest cinematic achievements for the colour blue coming up here. Yeah. What I'm going to talk about.
Well, you can't spoil it because we have to talk about it. So, what did you pick for your flop?
None other than, well, it's March of 2024. So we're coming up now on the 10-year anniversary of one of April 2024, of 2014. One of the greatest cinematic achievements of all time. The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Enter Electro.
Amazing. Incredible. Did you watch this when it came out?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. And were you like hyped for it?
So hyped.
Had you bought into the Andrew Garfield, like the webiverse as it was called? Were you like, yeah, I love him. I need to see what happens next.
So here was the crack with it.
Okay.
Saw the first Amazing Spider-Man. Hated it.
Okay.
Hated it. Amazing Spider-Man 1. Pew, it stinks. Okay. It stinks. I rewatched it for today.
Okay.
And it does not hold up to my already low standards. Okay. It's the only boring Spider-Man movie.
Okay.
I will say, I like them all. And I feel guilty ragging on something. I'm sure making a Spider-Man movie is the biggest pain in the world. Mm. And everybody involved. And there's little flashes of like, Andrew Garfield's so good in it. Emma Stone's so good in it. Their chemistry.
Off the charts.
I like that this version of Spider-Man is like a scientist. Like he's like trying to figure stuff out with science. So like he's weaker than the lizard. So I got to figure out, okay, lizards are cold-blooded. He's like doing little experiments and working on stuff in his garage. You're like, oh yeah, this is class. He's in his garage working away there. There's loads good about it, but there's loads really boring and dull about it. It's okay. Just very 2012. If you look at it, you're like, oh my. He started playing like that phone game where the ball bounces around.
Yeah.
There's one scene where he's just playing that scene on his web and it's like, Spider-Man. Get in the modern day, lad. Jeez Louise, Spidey, come on now.
But did you like Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man?
I loved Andrew Garfield. Okay. I thought he is so great. And Tobey Maguire's got its charm. And it's like, it's so funny that it's the year 2000 and we're making a movie from the 1960s. Like, it's so insane that this exists and is good as well. Mm. But it's not a real person that, okay, Andrew Garfield, that Tobey Maguire is playing. But like this, I was like, he's such a good actor. You really, like, he's got this thing. I'm not talking about his eyes.
That's fine, yeah, absolutely.
He's got this thing in his eyes where you just, like, care about him so much, you know? Where he's looking at you, like, he's looking at whoever he's looking at, and you're like, oh my God, I feel whatever you're feeling, I'm feeling.
Kind of like when you see a sad dog in an animal shelter.
Yeah, yeah. Andrew Garfield's like a humanoid
of empathy,
that.
Yeah.
Oh, he's so good. Emma Stone's so good.
You didn't think he was too old? Because I know that's a criticism that's leveled a lot at this particular generation of Spider-Man.
Tobey Maguire is at least in his 50s.
But that's the thing. Tobey Maguire is like 40 years of age when he's playing Peter Parker. He's in his 50s.
And like, he is older, but he's like a lanky. He's believable as a lanky. It's more so in this, which we'll get though. Don't you worry, dear listener. In the first one, he is like, he's supposed to be a teenager. It's like, you're in your early 20s.
Yeah.
In the second one, he's just graduated. He's a college student and he looks like he's in his mid to early 20s. Like, it's like, oh yeah, it kind of tracks.
Yeah. Okay.
But the first one is, yeah, he's a bit old.
Okay. So the first one, he gets his powers. We meet Gwen Stacy. They're like, they fancy each other.
Yeah.
He's still trying to get to the bottom of what happened to his parents. His uncle dies. The usual kind of Spider-Man
Spider-Man stuff. That's kind of why I didn't love about it as well. It's like, I've seen this.
Okay.
So are we going to, there's that, it's one of the worst, not worst scenes, but it's just one of the clunkiest scenes ever where they're like, all right, so we're making our fourth Spider-Man movie in 5 years. We're going to have Uncle Ben tell him about great power comes great responsibility. But we don't want him to say it, because why would you want him to say it? Why would you want him to say it? You wouldn't want that now, would you? To say the line. No, let's not have him say it. Let's have him do the most awkward. He's like, you know, when you have an ability to do a thing, you should do the thing. Not because you want to do the thing, because it's your responsibility. And it's like this long, like, meandering. You're like, gee, oh.
Just say the line.
Be Spider-Man.
Say the line, Martin Sheen.
Just start the movie and be Spider-Man. Yeah. Like, so for that and many reasons, the fighting's really boring in it. The lizard is lame. God, yeah. As much as I love...
The
Amazing Spider-Man 1 is lowdown.
Okay, so what happens in the second one then, and what was it about it that drew you back in?
Oh, okay, yeah. So I was hyped for it. I was seeing the trailers, and because I felt like the chess pieces were on the board. So yeah. I'm like, okay, that last one was a little clunky and awkward and stale, but this one, he's already Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I like the casting.
Yeah.
And I like Gwen Stacy.
Yeah.
And, okay, we're doing Electro. That's a different kind of a villain. Too many superhero movies, it's, you know, a guy fighting the guy with the same powers. Mm. And it's like, we're the same. And it's like, a spider fighting electricity is so random. Like, you know? What's a spider's natural enemy? Electricity, you know? So I'm like, this is, how is Spider-Man going to fight electricity? So that has me excited. Then they start announcing more like villains.
Okay.
And I know this was a huge bone of contention where people are like, there's too many villains. I'm like, there's Spider-Man fights loads of villains. Yeah. He lives in a, I like when my comic book world is a comic book world. And that's what this movie does so well is you're like, this is a bloody comic book. Like this is, there's rhinos running about and green goblins and spoilers if you haven't seen this movie from 10 years ago.
Oh no, we are actively spoiling it. So tough shit.
I know, yeah, yeah. But like, yeah, so I was like, there's just, I just felt, I liked the trailer. There was a promise of a whole bunch of villains. I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. Mm. Love Spider-Man. It's my favorite thing. Like when I was growing up, my Auntie Kate got me a Spider-Man comic. And that was like, some people have Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or football. athletics.
Not around here, partner. Not around here.
Career. Wife. my old Johnny boy, Spider-Man, was like my favorite thing. So I felt like this just feels like the most Spider-Man movie they could make. And it kind of is.
Okay.
Of any of the Spider-Man movies, I think this might be the most Spider-Man, for good and bad.
Okay, interesting.
It's the most, yeah.
Jamie Foxx as Electro. Thoughts?
An icon of blue cinema. An icon of blue cinema.
Because he's often, when this movie comes up, he's often critiqued.
Yeah, he is the real punching bag of the movie. And you can tell because when they made the Tom Holland one, they were like, all right, let's just, Jamie Foxx, you're now just Jamie Foxx instead of being Electro Cowlick. You are now just cool guy, no blue. Shame. You're just suddenly just a normal man instead of, I dig it. I dig it, especially early on when he's just running around with this crazy. Because you hear Jamie Foxx playing Electro, a thing comes in your eye. I remember watching the movie and sitting down and being like, all right, here we go. The first 10 minutes of this movie are insane.
Yeah, sorry. There is also, like, if you haven't really come in from the first movie as well and you're not super familiar with Spider-Man, I feel like you'd be like, what the fuck is going on?
It's insanity.
I've never seen this. I've watched the first one, and but I obviously watched the second one to do this podcast. And it opens and it's like a plane hijack scene. I was like, sorry? Sorry?
It's so bad, that opening. I have to, like, so I went and this is like, I had a rough time with the first one. I sat down and that plane hijack scene starts and I'm like,
were you like, oh no, it's happening again?
Oh, I don't care about Peter Parker's parents. I don't care if they're spies. Why is this Richard Parker the movie like? Who cares about Richard Parker?
Truly.
And he's got this laptop and he's got to upload it to Roosevelt.
Sorry, I actually took notes about that. Yeah. How is the internet still working on that plane? The plane is falling to, half of it's like shunted off and he's still like, do.
He's got a little cable, you see. He's very,
Ethernet cable,
yeah. Because it's in the past as well. Because remember, this came out in 2014, but that scene would have been 20 years before then.
Yeah.
So like, that was like in the
90s. Sorry, is this supposed to be set in the 90s?
That scene's in the 90s, yeah.
Oh, sorry, at that. Yeah,
if it's 2014 and he's like 20 and he's like,
no, well, you're right. Yeah, sorry, yeah, I'm being an idiot.
It's maybe like the year 2000.
Okay.
And he's plugging in his laptop, uploading to Roosevelt, his little subway station laboratory to basically tell his son he loves him. That scene is, I was so panicked and so worried. And then the music hits and you see like the Spider-Man symbol and then it starts flapping and then you realize it's his back and he's just flying through the city and you're like, unreal.
We've made it.
Unreal.
And made it through the wilderness.
And that first, like him swinging through the streets, is the most Spider-Man thing that's ever been put on movie. It's the best costume. It's the best web swinging.
The costume is lit.
It's unreal.
It's so gorgeous and vibrant and like shiny.
It's colorful. Yeah. It's got these big eyes on it. He's a lovely old lank.
Yeah.
He's not this little buff like Tobey Maguire is like, looks like he's been drinking milk. Like Andrew Garfield is a soy boy.
We don't want our Spider-Man drinking milk.
No, get him away from it. Milk along with electricity is one of the enemies of spiders. So he's swinging away. That's class. Big, goofy. Oh, there's a plutonium truck. And we got to stop the plutonium. I'm like, yes. Yeah. You hated it.
No, I hate that. As in, like, you're going about your day and there's a plutonium truck driving around. Hate when that happens.
Oh, my God. I'm like, yes. Unreal. And what? He's graduating. Of course, he's late for something. He's always late.
Yeah. Gwen's commencement speech. Yeah, she's very, but still seemingly very surprised that she has to give a speech, even though she knows she's valedictorian.
Yeah. And crazy. She says she's talking farther on the nose about living forever and immortal, and how, you know, you don't know how much time you've got on this earth.
The foreshadowing there. My God.
And like, imagine if you were in your high school graduation and your valedictorian just came up and started talking about death. We're all going to die someday. Me first, because I'm Gwen Stacy. Famously dead comic book character. Gwen Stacy. I'm going to die at the end of this movie, just in case you hadn't figured that out. That's the whole point of my character, as I die. But anyway, best of luck in college. Go do a keg stand. I'm going to be here.
See y'all in UCD. Not, because I'll be dead.
My dad died last year.
Now I'm about to die.
I'm about to die. Yeah.
Join some societies. Hope you have fun.
Oh, some clubs and socks. I'm not going to make it past this summer.
What did you think of the Gwen Stacy death scene as you were watching it, and I suppose more recently? Like, were you gagged initially watching it in cinema when it happened?
Oh my God. Yeah, like, it's of, as your comic book nerd, you know, Gwen Stacy, her the only thing about her is she dies.
Okay.
Like, that's her, like, she's Spider-Man's girlfriend who dies, and then they replace her Mary Jane. And Emma Stone is so good in the role, and she's so great. None of that exists, like, her being really fun and good. And she was this very 1960s two-dimensional, but she exists to die. So you're like, the second she's cast in the first one, you're like, it's countdown to no more Gwen Stacy. But in the movie, and she's in the clock tower, and you're like, well, this isn't a bridge. And that's where she's famously throws off the bridge. They actually go to the bridge where she dies in the movie, and they have like their moment, like, I'm going to move to London with you. And you're like, maybe she's not. And then she's falling down. That scene is, that whole fight is so good with him and the goblin in there. It's so quick. But how often are you watching a superhero movie now, or any kind of a franchise movie, and there's no kind of heft? Mm. Or wait, I can't believe I'm talking about heft and weight with The Amazing Spider-Man 2. But like, it's nasty. He's got little spiky stuff. He's trying to stab him. There's gears and there's little threads. And she is so fragile.
But her face as well. Like, Emma Stone brings so much to that character. Like, it's her slowly realizing, she's like, he can't save me now. I'm dead.
I'm fucked. Like, this is, I'm falling in a clock tower with a goblin man, just, and he doesn't want to take over the world. He's not trying to put a beam up in the sky. He wants to kill me.
He just wants to kill me.
He just wants to kill me. And Peter's just got to try and stop him. And it's like Gladiator.
It's
intense. And my sister got so mad at me. Okay. My younger sister, Catherine. I'll give her a shout out on the pod.
Shout out, Catherine.
You're one of the greats. But when I didn't tell her that Gwen Stacy died, and she like was in buckets, and she was like, you had to, you should have warned me that like that was going to happen. She was so upset. They do actually talk about the opening. Do you know the spy scene at the start?
Mm.
The whole movie, there's like this, like, there's like time in it.
Yeah.
There's like the opening, the very opening shot of the movie is you coming out of the darkness and you start going through gears and clockwork and a ticking hand, and you zoom out and it's Richard Parker's watch on the plane for the spy scene.
That's so evil. Oh my God.
It's like from the very start, it's telling you like this is, in the whole movie, there's like clocks and timers, and they're all talking about time, and like Aunt May's talking about what you do with your time, and Peter's talking about what you do with your time, and then you've got no more time because literally when she dies, it's because the clock strikes midnight. And then that snaps the thing, and all the clock goes, and she just falls down. And
the sound of her smacking her skull off the ground. That's
smacking it.
Smacking.
Oh, it's so mean.
Yeah.
And he goes down, and he's like, "Did he save her?" It's like, "You haven't saved her."
No.
I remember my heart was like, as he's going down, I was with my friend Ethan McNamara, another shout out.
Shout out Ethan McNamara.
Shout out Ethan McNamara. Full name. Absolutely. Give him a full name. Get married here in a few months. Here we go. This is spoilers for your best man speech. Anyway, this is... I'm going to be talking to me, bringing this on stage and being like, me and Ethan went to see this movie one time.
You know, marriage is a lot like The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
It is. I'm going to go up. I'm going to just read Gwen Spacey's.
Oh, I'm going to read her valedictorian.
Time. I'm me, famously dead character, John Splatter. But yeah, I remember just like, as he's going on, like, she's dead, isn't she? Oh, don't be dead. The thing is, you don't want her to be dead.
Yeah.
You so don't want her to be dead.
Yeah.
And then she's so dead.
Yeah.
Oh, she's it's so awful.
Dead. Yeah.
And then there's a really beautiful scene, and this is we'll get back to Jamie Foxx and there's a lot bad and camp that I find charming, but is bad.
Mm.
But there's a really tender, beautiful scene after that where we've got a little bit of Peter. We've shown the times pass, and Peter's been in mourning, and there's no Spider-Man anymore, and he's just distraught with grief. And Aunt May is walking around the house and she sees him and she comes up to him with a box and she's like, oh, Peter, you know, I'm putting away some of Ben's stuff. And Peter's like really taken aback by this. You're going to pack away, you're taking away Ben's stuff, you're giving away. He's like, no, I could never do that, but I'm going to take one last look at it and feel it and then I'm going to put it where it belongs. And then I'm just going to, you know. And it's just kind of like, because Aunt May's been through what Peter's been through.
Mm.
Like, in the last year, she's lost her husband. She's lost the love of her life. She's lost her partner. Like, and they do a real thing of, like, Aunt May's really grieving in these movies.
Mm.
And she really feels like I'm a single mother to a recently, like, a son who's lost their father, which Uncle Ben is like. And it's just really, and it's you're like, oh my God, I forgot that Sally Field and Andrew Garfield are like Academy Award people.
I love Sally Field.
They're so good.
Yeah.
She's such a great Aunt May.
Yeah.
Marissa Tomei is some
Look,
crack.
Let's be real. She was hot, okay?
She's hot. It's funny. Hot
she's
Aunt
hot,
May.
Hot and funny and what else though?
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And Tobey Maguire Aunt May. Hilarious that we're just doing like this Aunt May. Like we're really just, we're not going to update it at all to make it in the real world.
No.
We're just like, just the most impossibly oldest woman.
She's 8,000 years
old. She's 8,000 years old.
Like, we went so far one way and the other for every movie.
She is a pilgrim. Like she is a pilgrim.
She saw it. She was there.
She was there. Yeah. She is like, I was at the first Thanksgiving. And we're like, Aunt May, don't talk about that past.
But no politics
Sally
at the
Field
table.
Does
no
it
politics.
Both so well where like she feels modern, she feels like she's a real person in the real world.
Yeah.
But she has this wisdom, she's lived a life. She's not this, like, Spider-Man, like in the comic books, Aunt May is mostly a person who gets sick.
Okay.
So I'm talking about like Gwen Stacy, you know, I love comic books, but some of the ones from the 60s particularly are dated, but lots of it is just kind of two-dimensional. And Gwen Stacy is a nice person who dies.
Mm.
And Aunt May is a nice old woman who gets sick a lot.
Okay.
But Aunt May in this is like, she's got a career, she wants to be a nurse, she's funny, she's got like, I'm doing your laundry for you, they've got good banter, and she's not funny like a Marvel, new Marvel movie where it's like, I'm quippy, Mick. She's funny like our mams would be funny.
Yeah.
You know? And Andrew Garfield in this movie is funny like a kind of a dork would be funny.
Mm.
Like, he's not really actually funny. He's just trying to... There's a great scene with him and Harry Osborn when they first meet each other and they try and be funny with each other and they're not really very funny.
Mm.
But it's so on the... Like, it's like, you know your friend where he like... He talks about like, oh, Harry Osborn was like, oh, I didn't recognize you without the monobrow.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, this Harry Osborn's a spoiled rich kid who wouldn't be, but that's his way of trying to be funny.
Mm.
And it's really on the nose. And if this was made today, there would be like the cast of SNL trying to craft the perfect joke for Harry Osborn to say.
Mm.
But don't give him a perfect joke. He's not a comedian.
Yeah, that's fair. What about Harry Osborn then as Green Goblin, as a villain? How does he work for you?
I like the wrong footing of your Norman Osborn is in the first movie. It's Spider-Man's worst villain. They're eluding. It's a little bit of like a dark, like Batman Begins. You just see like little shadows of him and you're like, he's going to be the second movie. Mm. And they're going to Joker it. And this is Spider-Man's main villain, Norman Osborn, the Green Goblin. And then they just kill him off.
Yep. Classic.
But I think in an interesting way, and it's like, they do bring it into like, it's all fathers and sons, and Peter's father and Harry's father had this relationship, and now they've inherited this rivalry, but they're friends. And I think it gives him real, actual motivation. I think Dane DeHaan's a great actor. I think he is a full-on Slytherin in this movie. He is not a real person, but again, that's the fun of a comic book world. And I like it. Again, it's not nuanced, and it's not, but it's just, it's just comic booky in a really charming way. I think he delivers a lot of bizarreness quite well. Mm. You got to, like, there's a very threatening scene with him and Gwen Stacy in an elevator with the worst CGI behind them ever.
Yep.
Like, the awful CGI. But, like, I think he's very good. His career kind of fell off a cliff after this. He was kind of, like, going to be, some people are going to call him the next DiCaprio and stuff.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. But he's very good in that. Dumb Money movie, he shows up, he plays like a manager of a GameStop.
Okay.
And he's like now playing people his age, and it's like, oh, it's fun. Get the end on and stuff like this.
Yeah.
But I think he's very good, and I wanted to see more of him. I like the goblin design. I like, there's a deleted scene where he just like kills a bunch of people in Oscorp.
Right.
And like escaping. And it's all clunky CGI, but it's like, I would have liked to have seen a movie with this guy.
Yeah, I think my issue isn't that there were too many villains. It was that, and I don't have massive issues with Electro. I think the issues were with the dialogue. I don't, Jamie Foxx didn't have a lot to, whatever his direction was and the dialogue, the writing was, he didn't have a lot to work with there. But Harry Osborn was more threatening. So yes. I would have liked more him, less of Electro, but like better and more refined. Do you know what I mean? Because there's a one point towards the end where he's fighting with Spider-Man, and it's like, it could be like video game dialogue. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like, you could get away that easily. You're going to have to do more than that. But he says that like three or four times. It's so stoic and like there's nothing to it.
Yeah, this movie's very video gamey.
Yeah.
The whole thing, it's very video gamey. Again, for better and worse.
Okay.
Like, it is like, that opening scene is made, it may as well be like a video. Like, it looks like you're playing PS4, like.
Mm.
I do think that they get the balance well, where it's like, Electro is there, but it's, then the Harry Osborn thing is just kind of ticking away in the background.
Mm.
And I don't think they ever pull focus from each other or like, but I might be wrong, and I know some people would definitely say they definitely pull focus from each other. But
this podcast is exclusively for people who are always wrong, so just
bear
that in
mind. Good, yeah. I'll lean into it. I'll tell you this isn't
for people
who
are correct.
I won't show all my cards yet, but I've got something for you at the end that's going to really, that's a little, to show you just how wrong a person can be.
Okay.
And a very, anyway, that's a teaser.
Ooh. But you thought the balance was good. Between the villains.
So, I was watching this the other night. I watched it in two parts because I wanted to keep watching. Believe me, I wanted to keep watching.
Well, I don't know if it needs to be 2 hours, 20 minutes.
It's 2 hours and 20 minutes. But, and this is where I think I might be the exception to the rule. I paused it after the first fight with Electro.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, we've kind of, like, we've introduced the characters and the setting and, okay, we kind of started, and I felt like, honestly, I was going to click it and it was going to say 30 minutes. We were over an hour into the movie. I'm like, this is moving at a clip for such a long and bad movie. It moves at a clip. So I'm like, all right, but there's not much. There's very little Spider-Man in this movie.
Yeah, actually, that's a very fair point. It seems to be more focused on the Peter Parker and Gwen of it all, which I do think works.
Yeah, and the best thing in the movie is their relationship.
Yeah, because they were also going out in real life.
Yeah.
Like, it's, the horniness is,
it's so palpable. Horny. It's so,
but I think
horny.
It's also what makes Gwen dying so effective, because it's like, oh, you guys were actually in love. Okay.
Yeah, you guys were, like, all three of the Spider-Men went out with all three of their love interests. Tobey Maguire went out with
Kirsten. Tobey Maguire went with Kirsten? Did he?
Yeah, for years, yeah. They broke up between Spider-Man 2 and 3.
Oh, okay.
And Tom Holland with Zendaya and Andrew Garfield with Emma Stone.
Okay.
This is the only movie, though, where I believe they're riding.
But that's the thing. I don't get that in the first Spider-Man trilogy
no,
at all.
No, Kirsten Dunst, Tobey Maguire, there's no... They are sleeping in two single beds.
Yeah.
In the same room, like they are. Zendaya and Tom Holland are, he can't wait till he lets her top him. Like he is just, he's talking to Ned Leeds being like, I really want to top Mary Jane.
Oh my God.
He might be a frigid, like.
Maybe, yeah.
He
maybe.
Might be. He gives off big frigid energy.
Huge frigid energy.
Yeah. Ned Leeds, no way. He's out. He's smacking lips with Liz yeah. Allen the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I love that they allude as well in that new Spider-Man where Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire are both warning Tom Holland about your best friend is going to become a goblin and try and kill you. And then like he's just looking at Ned Leeds and he's like...
Ned's like, what the fuck?
What the fuck?
Don't look at me. We're going to take a very quick break, but me and John will be back right after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We were talking about the setting of the actual movie, but like you know this was made in the 2010s because Pursuit of Happiness, Kid Cudi features quite frequently. The remix, the Project X remix, I will say, not the original. Talk to me about the other musical moments in
for
this film.
For you, for you. Na, 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 na.
What was that? What was that?
Like, it's... This is why. This is really what I'm trying to get to with this movie. And okay. This is why I think it's got such a charm. Is that movie, that moment is so cringe and bad. It's so cringe and bad, but I love it.
So it's him, he's doing a Charlie Day on it, trying to like work out what the fuck happened to his parents. And he's doing like all the strings on the walk.
He's just had a fight with Gwen Stacy.
Yeah.
And he's decided because of this fight with Gwen Stacy, I'm going to find out what happened to my parents.
Yeah.
That's the literal train of thought.
Logical next.
Is he goes
step, yeah.
from he's upset with it, he's upset, like he comes back and he's kind of upset in his house. He's walking around like, oh, I'm upset. Oh, I love her, but and then he goes, you know what? I'm gonna solve my parents' murder. That's gonna be and then this music comes on as he starts putting stuff up on a corkboard, an already cluttered corkboard. He has to move like a chair out of the way so he can put it down to the floor. And this song plays. For you.
What is that song?
I don't know.
Hang on, it haunts me. Yeah.
God, I love it. I genuinely love it. Like, I got like.
Oh my God, it's Gone, Gone, Gone by fucking Philip Phillips. He won like American Idol in 2000.
Unreal, of course.
Jesus Christ.
Of course.
Of course it was.
Yeah. And like.
This is a soundtrack that also features Kendrick Lamar, I should say. Like, yeah. We are going, again, ends of the spectrum here.
Unreal. Like, there's, like, this is, like, this really cool song that plays. It's a cool song that plays in the credits, but does not match the movie at all. It's
no.
like a cool hip-hop song where it's just showing just basically blueprints of all the villains' weapons for the next 7 movies that they're never going to make. Like, they do, like, there's this one scene where they walk through the, like, the hall of exposition where it's just like, look at this Dr. Octopus arms and this vulture wings. Look at these movies we're never going to make because this movie's going to lose a whole bunch of money. But then the credits has, like, this, like, cool hip-hop song set to schematic designs for the villains for, like, the next 7 movies that they full-on just never, ever make these movies.
Yeah.
That For You scene, I honestly, I fist bumped. I was like, yes, I'm so happy this is happening. In a very like room, like, do you know when like people go to the room and they celebrate the scenes?
Mm.
It's one of those moments where it's like, this is so crap. I love it.
This is brilliant. It grossed 709 million worldwide. So it was the ninth highest grossing film of 2014. But I think domestically, it only just made its budget back or just under, which
so
is considered
like...
it
was a hugely expensive movie. Yeah, it was a massively expensive movie. They haven't ever really revealed how much it cost. It's going to say like the production budget's like 250 million, but there's a million reshoots.
And
check
it was
out
the
deleted
ever
scenes. Like, there's like scenes where like his dad comes back from the grave, like his dad's alive now.
Hardly.
There is, yeah. Mary Jane's in the movie. They cut her out of the movie.
Shailene Woodley. I didn't know this.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch. There's a scene where Norman Osborn's head is in a jar and it's been reanimated. There's insane. Like, there's a whole other movie that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Like, you should... I should have Googled him up. Kevin Feige, they, like, showed him notes and scripts because they were kind of teetering a relationship with Marvel. And, like, he's just, like, ragging on, like, no one cares about Peter Parker's spy parents. No, it was, like, it got released in the Sony hack. But that kind of led light of being like, it says the production budget's like 250 million.
Mm.
It's probably somewhere around 400 million. They spent so much on marketing. If this movie made money back, it was maybe like 50 million.
It was minimal, like, which at the time was viewed as a failure for them, I think.
Failure.
And the critics didn't like it. We could go through it, but yeah, I think
it's the lowest rated Spider-Man movie. It's the only Spider-Man movie that's got the green thing on Rotten Tomatoes.
The certified rotten, yeah.
Yeah.
Guy Lodge of Variety said redundancy remains a problem, but this overlong superhero sequel gets on by sound, fury and star chemistry, which is a kind of okay review. But you mentioned the Sony hack there that happened in 2014 as well, which is where Sony Pictures had a lot of confidential documents released. Have you ever read this email that was leaked as part of the Sony hack about Spider-Man and about like thoughts for the follow-up movies that were sent to Amy Pascal, who was like heading up Sony Pictures at the time?
I feel like I would have at the time, but I'm ready to hear it. I've forgotten most of it, I'm sure.
Okay, so it's from a man called Nick Shore, who hopefully doesn't have a job anymore, because my God, this is girlies and boys, no more imposter syndrome after reading this, right? Okay, so the subject of the email is Spidey Thought, and it says, hey Amy, just a couple of random thoughts from whatever, he's in an airport. And he has them bullet pointed out. So bullet point number one, a rising trend we see with millennials are the really extreme forms of experiential exercise, like Tough Mudder, in brackets, a sort of filthy triathlon, the colour run, and even things like hot power yoga, veganism, etc. Millennials will often post no big deal on their social media after doing it, as in no big deal, also known as the humble brag. Wondering if Spidey could get into that in some way. He's super athletic, bendy, strong, intense, and also it's no big deal to him, of course. This gets
I
worse.
I just climbed a wall. Humble brag.
No big deal.
I got the proportionate strength of a spider. Humble brag.
Okay, second bullet point. EDM, in brackets, electronic dance music, is the defining music for millennials. Wondering if there's an EDM angle somewhere with Spidey?
How have we not talked about the electro music yet?
Oh, sorry, let's.
Oh, yeah, EDM makes it in there anyway. Now, I like it.
Okay.
I know I'm wrong. I love the music of electro in this.
Okay.
I think it's so over the top. It's so insane. He's an electric man. Let's make the most electric music you've ever heard in your life. He is like, when they're in Times Square and it's like whispering, like, he lied to me. I'm like, honestly getting a little bit of goosebumps being like, they lied to you, electro. Alistair Smythe was mean to you at work. Yeah. Spider-Man, you're to blow out your candles.
Do you know what I couldn't understand? When Electro got his powers, his tooth gap was automatically gone. How did that happen?
They show it. The electricity melts his teeth into it.
So his teeth
all fuse together. So like, even like he's got a big gap between the two. That fixes him. But all the other gaps, they all fit. It's like he's wearing a gum shield now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Invisalign. There you go. The last point in this Sony email I have to read. Snapchat just launched a story functionality, which is sort of day in the life of me, told in a series of Snapchats that expire after 24 hours. It has a very VIP quality about it, since it's invitation only. Getting invited into Spidey's Snapchat circle would be huge and very buzzworthy and cool. 10 out of 10, no notes. Brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. That's why
these are the people who are in charge of things.
These
okay?
are the people who are in charge of things. And that's why this is really why I think the people involved in this movie deserve so much credit.
Mm.
Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone, Mark Webb, the director, okay?
The director's name is Mark Webb.
I know.
The director's name is Mark Webb.
They call it the Webiverse. His franchise, like.
Yeah.
He was born to direct it.
He's born to direct it. And they have to dodge Snapchat, EDM music, veganism.
Well, they couldn't dodge the EDM music.
They couldn't dodge. No one can dodge. No one's perfect. Even Spidey nicks a bullet every so often.
They were like, we'll draw the line of veganism, but we'll let you have the EDM
Norman
music.
Norman Osborn, heads in jars, dad's coming back from the grave. Like, the amount of terrible, like a tidal wave of terrible that was heading towards this movie. And I think it ended up being good crack.
Yeah.
And I think it really is like, there are some really great fight sequences. There is some really camp moments. There's a German scientist who is going like, I will experiment on the electro. And you're like, yeah, throw that in here. It's a comic book.
Mm.
Why not? Let's, you know, not everything needs to be Dune part two, okay? Mm. Let's like...
So true.
So true. Like, we don't need to Dune up Spider-Man. This feels like... These movies are for children.
Yeah.
These movies aren't for children. And like, let's put some stuff in there for the kids.
Mm.
You know? I'm man enough to admit that I like things for children. I don't need us to adult up the children things for adults now so that I can pretend that I'm not a child. There's some stuff that should be adulty and should be, if you're making Daredevil, make it sad and noir
and
Catholic and
yeah.
violent. So Catholic, you know. But if you're making Spider-Man, make it colorful. And, you know, I've got a nephew. He's 2. He loves Spider-Man. He runs around dressed as Spider-Man. Like, give him a German scientist in the movie that he can be like, oh, yeah, that's a bit of goof. And also give him eels biting a man.
Oh, my God. What would you have liked to have seen happen in a third Amazing Spider-Man?
Here's the thing.
Okay.
I think we'll get it.
Do you really think? Andrew Garfield pushing mid-40s, going to be putting back on the Spidey suit? Well, technically he has already.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Spider-Man No Way Home. But.
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't heard it announced already.
Okay.
I think this Venom universe is so the Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay.
Like it feels like the same world. It feels like the Webiverse, doesn't it? Like it's got the same like campiness, goofiness, cringiness, badness. I haven't seen Madame Web yet. Like Uncle Ben is in it. Like it's set in the 90s. Like Uncle Ben is like a young man in it. It's all about a conspiracy and all this. Like I feel like they allude to Spider-Man in like the Morbius. I can't believe I'm talking about the Morbius post-credit scene.
I can't believe it either.
Yeah.
What is my life?
They allude to Spider-Man. I think for the right paycheck, and that's a big thing, but I think they will do 10 years, like it's they will do, it will be like 10, 15 years from now. Harry Osborn will have been in prison that whole time. We got that beautiful full circle moment of Andrew Garfield and that new Spider-Man and saving Zendaya, and they recreate the shot from that. And that's why I think this movie is more iconic than people think, because if you look at that new Spider-Man where all the Spider-Mans come back, I don't think any movie is more represented in that than this one.
Mm.
I think like there's definitely Spider-Man 2 with Dr. Octopus, and of course Green Goblin's the main villain. But like Electro's such a big part of that. Andrew Garfield's character arc is the biggest in the movie. Like he's the one everybody came out talking about. I really feel like, and also Sony just want to make money.
Mm.
And I feel like there would be an audience for it. I think if they went and they said, we're doing The Amazing Spider-Man 3, Harry Osborn has been in prison for 10 years because you know what? He tried to kill somebody. He did kill somebody. And it's not likely he's going to escape after a month. So He comes back from Marvel World and fuck it. It's the Venom world now. We've got Venom, Kraven, all this crack. And just make a big, dumb, goofy. You can make your good Spider-Man movies in the MCU and make a bunch of camp crap over here in the Sony world. They need... That Sony Venom universe needs their Spider-Man.
Mm.
It's this gaping hole. It's all, they're all Spider-Man-y kind of people. They're all talking about Spider-Man. There's Spider-Man graffiti as Morbius is walking down the street. Like, Spider-Man exists. They need their Spider-Man. I don't think there's any more appropriate Spider-Man for that universe than Andrew Garfield, Amazing Spider-Man 2. I think we'll get another one.
What is it about Tom Holland's Spider-Man that you're...
I like it.
You do like it.
I do like it.
What doesn't work about it for you?
Pardon?
What doesn't work about it for you?
I think a lot of it's in the writing, weirdly. I think it's... He gets a lot of help.
Okay.
I've mentioned earlier, I like my Spider-Man. Spider-Man should be like, he's the ultimate underdog. He is... He's a smart kid. He's always fighting people who are bigger, stronger, faster than him. He's big and strong and fast. He's got superpowers. But he's fighting giant lizards or electricity. Or he's fighting things that he shouldn't be able to beat. And he has to think his way out of it. And he's in his garage. Like, there's a fun sequence in this. The YouTube video is a little over the top. But he's trying to figure out how to make his web shooters not explode when they get electrified. And it's like, yeah, that's Spider-Man. He's in his garage. Nobody knows who he is. And he's just trying to figure this stuff out. And I feel like in this new one, he'll sit into a lab and he'll type in, make my suit the best. And then an impossible machine creates a CGI suit that's the best. I think Tom Holland's great in the performance. I think he is really Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield put in a blender. Like, he is a dork. But he is charming, but he is funny. I think there's loads to like about him. And I think we're set up in a good place if there's more Tom Holland Spider-Man, that he will just be a guy in New York City trying to get along. And I really like those movies. All three of those Tom Holland Spider-Man movies are really, really good. Like I said, the only Spider-Man movie I don't like is the first Amazing Spider-Man. Every other Spider-Man movie I like, even Spider-Man 3 with Venom and all that crack. Like, again, I just think it's camp and bad, but in a fun way.
Sorry, emo Tobey Maguire, brilliant.
Hilarious, yeah.
Brilliant.
Unbelievable, yeah. Enough said.
Yeah.
Enough said. Like, great, but... I think Andrew Garfield is the best actor of the three of them.
Yeah.
I feel like this Spider-Man is the most New Yorker of the three of them. I feel like it's the most cartoony and comic booky of the three of them. It's the least apologetic of the three of them. It's not trying to say like, I'm sorry I'm a comic book or I'm sorry I'm... It's like, no, this is stupid and dumb and let's have a bit of crack. And... I think Andrew Garfield he's been very vocal. He's always been a huge fan of Spider-Man. He's a huge fan of the character. And I think they could do it. I don't know, would it be good? I think I would like it.
Mm.
I want it. And I feel like if they're making Madam Web,
Yeah.
Surely they'd make The Amazing Spider-Man 3. Surely there's more of an audience for The Amazing Spider-Man 3 than there is Madam Web.
Yeah.
You know? Sorry, Madam Web.
Well, no, it's not sorry, Madam Web. I'm not apologizing to an inanimate film that Dakota Johnson is not that good in, so...
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it, but from what I've heard, bad.
I might go see it after this now. I'm all jonesed up to watch some bad Spider-Man.
I want to go and have a few drinks, like, you know, that kind of way?
Yes, I do, yeah. Me and some friends want to go to... Shout out Stephen Bradley.
Ronan.
Are going to go and go to All You Can Eat Wings in the center of town and just get like burst at the seams and then sit into Madam Web and just be in a food coma.
I think that was the way the director wanted you to watch it, as far as I'm aware.
I think so
their
too.
Artistic vision. Ultimately, then, John, why do you think The Amazing Spider-Man 2 kind of flopped?
Why do I think it flopped? I think a lot of things. I think they really got focused on... The main reason, I think, honestly, I think there's a whole bunch of factors involved. I think a big one that doesn't get spoken about is, I think, when movies flop, I think you more need to look at the previous movie.
Okay.
And I think the first Amazing Spider-Man was boring and not very exciting. And you remember, this is around the time when the first Avengers movie is coming out. This is the same year Guardians of the Galaxy came out. There was exciting comic book stuff coming out. And the first Amazing Spider-Man movie is so boring and it's not exciting at all. And I think a lot of people were like, well, like, it's just Spider-Man again.
Mm.
I do think then it got pantsed by the critics. So, all right, the first one's not great. This one's getting worst critical response. There's all this drama behind the scenes. Everybody's coming out. There's the producers and this and that and Amy Pascal and Norman Osborn's head's in a jar. And, like, I think there's just a lot. There was a lot of drama around this movie. A lot of skepticism and anxiety, and it came out in April kind of defensively, where it's like, we're not putting this out quite in the summer, we don't want to go up against Guardians of the Galaxy and other Marvel stuff. And people just kind of wanted they wanted Spider-Man in the MCU, and yeah, it flopped. I think that was Tom Holland getting into the that was the right thing to happen.
Yeah,
I think the end result is a good thing. Do I wish I had a crystal ball and could see what an Amazing Spider-Man 3 from back then would have looked like? Yeah. But if that had happened, it probably would have flopped and it would be like Fantastic Four now, where we'd only be getting another Spider-Man and it would feel like a little too late. And it's great that in the peak of the MCU and the peak of Marvel, we got Spider-Man in it. Mm. Spider-Man's in Endgame. He's in Infinity War. We've got 3 MCU Spider-Man movies. So I think it is for the better that it flopped. All these people are infinitely wealthy. I don't care if they make more money. But I think now that the dust has settled, Amy Pascal, make a third one.
Please.
Come on.
Please. Yeah. Please, Amy. Please, I know you listen. John, what a pleasure it's been.
Oh, I want to share you something before we go. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I was waiting for a good segue. So, when this movie came out, I was in college.
Okay.
And I got a part-time job writing movie reviews for a website called Irish News Review.
Okay.
And I wrote the most embarrassing review ever about this movie.
Okay, do you have it?
I have it.
Oh, perfect.
I have not looked at this in 10 years.
This is the best
way
to end.
It's so... I know I have some of the things I say are still burned in my memory, and this exists on the internet.
Okay.
So I thought I would, in the spirit of the podcast, share Brilliant. With you...
Absolutely.
My thoughts. This was 20-year-old John Spillane's thoughts, a 20-year-old film critic, which everybody needs.
Yeah.
Okay. Irish News Review. The Amazing Spider-Man 2. The writing's going to be bad as well, I think.
Okay.
I've already looked at this first sentence as a nightmare. I'm struggling to read it. There are few things that I have found more sensitive about than the things they loved at a child. Just soak that sentence in there for a second.
Brilliant.
If you mention it with kindness, their faces will light up. And if you speak ill towards it, they will be hurt in a special way. It's already so much worse than I thought it would be. We all have that one thing from our childhood that we just love. For me, it's Spider-Man. I unabashedly love Spider-Man. However, this does not mean that I always love a Spider-Man film. As much as anything done right in these films is pure ecstasy to me. However, if something is tackled wrong, it is akin to spitting in my mouth and slapping me in the face all at once. The Sam Raimi Spider-Mans were pretty fun, but not what a modern representation of what the character and his villains are. The first in the Mark Webb series was good, despite hurdles put in its own way, with a needless conspiracy subplot and a lackluster villain in the Lizard. I was being kind there.
Yeah,
I hated it back then. I was trying to be positive. Okay, where I've lost my
you
place.
You really
here.
Hate the lizard.
I hate the lizard.
You hate
that,
the lizard.
That performance of the lizard. That actor, I can't pronounce his name.
Rhys Ifans.
He's a great actor.
He was miscast.
He
I think,
is yeah. so bad in that movie. Yeah. And the writing is so bad. And it's like, this bit's like, oh, yes, you lizards don't like to be threatened. It's like, oh my God, I hate you. With all of that being said, I am delighted to report that The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is not only the best Spider-Man movie ever, in my humble opinion, it is the best superhero film ever, and has pipped The Avengers as the best cinema experience I have ever had. For me, it was a near perfect film. Andrew Garfield has taken the roles of both Peter Parker and Spider-Man and gives us everything that I have imagined from the page and in a real world way. I'm really bad at writing. This is a nightmare. His performance in this film is no perfect and now puts him on the Robert Downey Jr. and Tom Hiddleston level of owning his character. I stand by that. I think he owns it. He's good. His relationship with Gwen Stacy is charming and playful, yet with an obvious and intense love. You know what they say? The best love is an obvious one.
It's obvious and intense.
Yeah. I love you in an obvious way. For me, the love interest in superhero movies often fall flat and even take from the film. However, this relationship elevates everything in the film from the humor to the drama. Mark Webb directed 500 Days of Summer, one of my favorite all-time rom-coms.
Oh, my God.
I don't stand by that
so
anymore.
So college boy.
Yeah,
so college 20 boy.
20 years old. And he once again shows that he's one of the best directors working today at showcasing young love. There's no one thing I can pinpoint as making the film for me everything in this film. What? It was executed as well as it could have. Who is this person? Could have been. However, I'll be hard pressed to find a fact in the film that I enjoyed more than the villains. Than the villains. I gotta do this quicker.
It sounds like someone's having a stroll.
I was having a stroll. I was like,
you're like, I have to get this out. You're like Peter Parker's dad in the plane. He's like, I have to tell my son I love him. Roosevelt.
In this film, we are presented with three: the Green Goblin, the Rhino, and the main antagonist, Electro. Three villains was a red flag for many fans who remember the random pick and mix villains that Spider-Man 3 was. For me, a worrying sign was how Max Dillon, the man destined to become Electro, seemed to appear in the trailers. He had that classic Spidey villain appearance of being a kind-hearted scientist who gets in a freak accident, resulting in gaining new and dangerous powers while challenging their moral compass. While he does follow some of these tropes, he is a very much a unique and interesting character. Even before he gains life-changing powers, Max is clearly an unusual man and is a villain the likes we have not seen in a Spidey villain ever. Okay, you know, it's almost over. Good. I just scroll down there and I'm like, how long is this? We've got two paragraphs left.
Brilliant.
My favorite villain across any genre is the Green Goblin. I stand by that. He's a great villain.
Mm.
Not this movie, in literature.
Generally, yeah.
Generally.
Yeah.
That new Spider-Man movie, come on, unreal. Despite his silly name and appearance, he is such a deeply layered and well-developed character. You essentially get Lex Luthor and the Joker in one demonic package. Dahan gives the character the performance it has long deserved and outperforms Willem Dafoe and James Franco's takes, which is a master achievement considering the stature of those actors.
Fuck off, Pass John.
What a you've had a couple of howlers here now in this. That is one of the most embarrassing things I've ever said.
Yeah, truly.
Sorry,
better than Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe.
No,
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, Willem Dafoe. I'm so sorry. Please,
he listens
don't.
As well.
Shit.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dafoe. Although mainly a force from the shadows for most of the movie, his few highlights are the film's highlights for me.
His highlights
are the film's highlights.
Are also my highlights.
Yes. The Rhino would be far from the multi-dimensional character the other two rogues are, and that's perfect. Webb has learned an all-important lesson from other superhero directors need to learn. Not all villains need to be complex.
Perfect.
I actually preach that one, yeah. They don't need an origin story. Give them a clear voice, a clear motivation, and make them a threat. It will take a few more viewings and at least one in IMAX 3D before I can cast this film in my all-time favorite films list. However, I am confident it's going to be high. In a summer full of superhero films, so far we have had two and both have been great. It is going to be very interesting to see if this is all just being a brilliant start to a mediocre season, or will X-Men Days of Future Past and Guardians of the Galaxy be able to keep this standard up? Judging by their trailers, we may be in store for a summer of films like none we have seen before. I could do a six-hour podcast...
Oh my God.
Covering the reasons I love this film, but now I think it's up to yourselves to go and see what you think. Are you excited for The Amazing Spider-Man 2? If you've seen it, what are your thoughts? What superhero flick do you think will rule the summer? Comment below.
Wow.
Oh, I feel like an exorcism. Oh my God.
It's out, you know. You're done.
I'm so sorry to the people of the internet.
And you didn't even need 6 hours. You only needed one and a bit. There you go.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I could talk more about this movie. Go and watch it, guys. Go and watch it. But defend this movie. I feel like this movie has its defenders. Let's come out of the shadows and stop being ashamed of ourselves.
Yeah.
Let's just like bad things.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's what flap culture is all about.
What's it about?
Liking shit. John, it's been such a pleasure. You're always welcome back. There's the Blu-ray again. Where can people find you if they want to hear more?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to announce I'm starting a new podcast called The Amazing John Spillane 2, where we just watch this weekly and we... No, I... That would... That's... It's weird that would be a believable thing that I would start. Find me at John Spillane. I just don't know why I wiped my nose at that moment. At John Spillane Comedy on Instagram. And that's where I'll announce stuff if I'm doing bits. But this was so much fun. Thank you, first of all, for having me on.
You're so welcome.
But thank you for giving me an excuse to rewatch this movie. Because it's hard as a person in their adult life to find an excuse or a reason to say, I have to sit down and watch The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And so you gave me that reason. And thank you for championing true art.
Again, that's what we're here for.
What did you think of the movie?
I thought it was good. I gave it 3 stars on Letterboxd.
Yeah, there we go.
It's Fanuta J on Letterboxd if you want to read
more. Yes. I'm the John Spillane on Letterboxd, but I don't review movies on it. I just put a diary, but you'll see how stupid. I watched 60 movies so far this year. So watch my addiction.
Okay, what was your favorite so far?
The movies of Elaine May.
Okay.
I watched 3 of them in a row. A New Leaf, The Heartbreak Kid, and Mikey and Nikki. The first two are super funny comedies from the 70s, but like, The Heartbreak Kid is like one of the most awful protagonists you've ever seen in a comedy, but you're still rooting for him. And then Mikey and Nikki is just like this beautiful, amazing showcase of acting. It's about like these two best friends, and they're basically going through a breakup. And that's all I'll kind of tell you about it, but it's John Cassavetes and Peter Falk, and they give these amazing performances. My tastes have gone a little bit more sophisticated since I first reviewed The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I was thinking, it doesn't sound like they're superheroes.
No, I don't watch much superhero movies anymore. I think they peaked in 2014.
Sure. You were like, they'll never do better, so you know
they'll
I'm
never
done.
Do better. No.
They'll never do better. John Spillane, you are... How do I end this again? Sorry. John Spillane, thank you so much for joining me on Flap Culture. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
A big thank you to John. I will leave all of his links below if you want to check him out and see him at any upcoming gigs. Very funny man. Very funny man. Cannot wait to have him back. Finally, Who's top of the flops this week?
You're a flop.
Top of the flops this week, and it should have been last week as well. I actually just completely forgot because I was trying to forget. Camila Cabello. She's trying to be a hyperpop girly. She is flat out. New single. I love it. We don't have official charting positions for it yet as it was released last week, featuring Playboi Carti. She got Playboi Carti out of hiding for a verse, and he's in the video. This song is bad, and I won't pretend like it isn't. It is the most flagrant ripoff of Charlie XCX's I Got It. It's just so transparent in what it's trying to do and how it's attempting to pivot Camila into this like new. And like, this is the thing, right? Do all pop stars need eras? Is this ultimately Taylor Swift's fault? Maybe. Actually, I maybe think it is. I don't think every pop star needs like this clear cut, defined, you know, to the T, every molecule is assigned to an aesthetic and a thing. You know what I mean? Like, this is the frustrating thing here where they're like trying to use I Love It as this launch pad to be like, oh no, Camila, like, she's an it girl. Remember we talked about, you know, what it takes to be an it girl, a main pop girl. I think we talked about this on the Cheryl episode, obviously, the Cheryl episode and the Ariana review that we did on Patreon. Like, what it takes to be a main pop girl. And obviously, it's like public narrative. Camila doesn't have that at the minute, as far as I'm aware. She kind of had it for a minute when it was like she was seen with Drake. And then it was like, no, no, we're just friends, right? Kind of no public narrative there, right? So it's like, okay, we need to hammer in the aesthetic, right? We need to, she's bleach blonde now after being like really dark hair, bleach blonde, kind of messy makeup. She's got her tatas out on the cover. Here we are, okay? So you could argue, okay, if you were to believe it, if you were to take it hook, line and sinker, she has the aesthetic because it's clear and it's established this is what she's trying to do. But then the issue comes like, where are the bops? Because you need the bops to tie into the aesthetic, to the public narrative informs the bops. Like, what is this? It's just the most. Also, the fact that like the song sounds out of time, and I know it's meant to sound like that. Like, I am a hyperpop fan. I like a lot of hyperpop music. This doesn't sound like it is supposed to work. This sounds like something went wrong in the studio, and it's like out of sync. She's out of sync. The music is out of sync. I don't get it. And it's really weird because it like interpolates to good songs. It interpolates, which I did not realize this, interpolates the chorus of Rihanna's Cockiness, and it samples Gucci Mane's Lemonade. Again, I will say again, two good songs. So this should work, and it just doesn't. And it's reflected in reviews. Now, I will say there have been some positive reviews, but I'm just going to focus on the negative ones because they're funny and I agree with them. Alphonse Pierre for Pitchfork described Cabello's switch to hyperpop a failed experiment, referring to the song multiple times in their review as nonsense. I just think it's so transparent. Like, it sounds like it was calculated and thought up in a boardroom, in an email thread, that it was like, okay, so we've like cornered certain markets and, you know what Camila's good at. We know what she can do. But is that necessarily like popular anymore? No, not necessarily. What do the kids like? Hyperpop. So get that girl a bottle of bleach. Get her tatas out on the cover. And we'll shoot a music video that doesn't really make sense. And, you know, we'll call it hyperactive avant-pop. Three words that don't make sense, respectfully, and we'll just hope for the best. But you know what, Camila? I see right through you, and it's shite. It's shite. And I don't know how you thought this was going to compete with all of this amazing other music we're getting this year. Like, Billie Eilish is currently teasing new material. We're talking about the Beyonce album on the Patreon. Taylor album is imminent. Not sure about that, but anyway. I don't know. Flop behavior, flop song, flop behavior, absolute flop star. And I do not mean that endearingly. I mean it derogatively. Anyway, that's it for me. Thank God, says you. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. We're on social media at flopculture_pod if you want to follow us over there. I love your ratings. Please give them to me. I'm so greedy for them. Wherever you're listening, I would really appreciate it. And as I mentioned, we're on Patreon, patreon.com/flopculture. You get at least 3 bonus episodes a month, which is great. So much fun. What do we have coming up this month? The Beyonce album, as I mentioned, Owen is back. We're doing Fleabag, of course. We are reviewing the Taylor album, of course. And Carla is back and we're going to watch After We Collided. And it's going to be so terrible. It's going to literally be so bad. But we're doing it for you. Great, isn't it? $4.50 a month and you get at least 3 bonus episodes a month. And you get these episodes ad-free if you hate the ads. I get it. Hello to some recent patrons. Hello, Paul Mack. Hello, Aisling N. Hello, Ellie. Thank you so much for joining us. If you guys are listening and you want to hear something in particular, let me know. It's helloflopculture@gmail.com. As a reminder, some of these episodes are available to watch on YouTube. Just look up me, Fionnuala J. You'll find them all there. This has been Flop Culture, edited by the wonderful Adam Shannon. I can't wait to see you all next week. Until then, bye-bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.